Hello, punkers, and welcome to episode 8 of Probably Punk. I'm your host, Joe Wise. Today on the show, we have Moon Bandits, some of my best music friends from here in sunny Los Angeles, California. Moon Bandits and I have been playing music together for a really long time. It was really cool to get to sit down and talk with them. We went over to their house for this interview, and they cooked us a very nice vegan dinner. We sat around and talked, and we recorded about 2 hours, maybe a bit more, and then decided to stop recording and then continue to just hang out and talk more about stuff until really late. And this episode could have been split up into like 3 or 4, but I decided to just kind of cut out some of the more rambling stuff and stick to that sweet, juicy content that I know y'all demand. But, you know, if you are interested in hearing the super long version, you can contact me. I'll send you the unedited 2 hours and something version. All right, here we go. And just a quick heads up, there is some talk of sexual assault in this episode, so if you're not trying to hear about that right now, maybe just skip it.
Is it you get it like the 99 cent store,
yeah,
or something? Like it'd be like a dollar. Like
I don't remember. You're just plastic.
And when you always want it,
yeah, totally.
And then it breaks like really quickly.
Are any of you guys familiar? Do any of you guys remember there being like Super Mario Brothers sodas? Do any of you guys remember that?
Yes.
No.
They were like they would sell them at like the 99 cent store, and they were really small. And they do you remember this? Because
yeah.
Most people don't remember this. It's like such fond childhood memories of just getting cavities and drinking.
I don't think I ever had one because I'd never.
You know what I remember? I remember when the 99 cent store sold wine.
Really?
Yeah. They sold wine for 99 cents.
I feel like that's still a thing in like Las Vegas.
Oh, I don't know. I just remember they used to have it and I thought that was cool in my drinking days.
That does sound, yeah. Yeah.
So we're going now.
Woo!
Officially.
We are on.
I really like this thing. It's comforting.
Goes with your complexion.
Green.
Okay.
I don't know. You wrote down a bunch of questions,
yeah,
so
okay.
I figured.
If you guys could tell us a bit about yourself, your names, what you guys play.
Oh. I'm Astrid. I play the violin. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
What I play?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I play the
like
violin,
what
sort
board
of.
Games?
Oh.
And I recently started playing Settlers of Catan. And I like that game, although I feel like it's kind of fucked up. And the other day we played Scrabble, and sometimes I play Magic. Yeah, I like to do other things, like garden and knit and sit by my fire and hang out with my cat, my dogs.
Oh, I'm Tommy, and I play the banjo in the band, and I play the singing as well. And I also have recently discovered the fun that is involved in Settlers of Catan. In fact, we should maybe just play that game and record that. Because it would be fun. And it would be a great way for us all to not be friends anymore.
That's true.
You know,
I don't even know. Okay, how does the game work? What is...
Settlers of Catan is essentially like the real world.
Yeah, you have to settle. There's different materials. There's wood or... Straw?
No.
Sheep.
No. There's
sheep.
And there's wheat.
You're familiar
oh,
with
it's
this
wheat.
Game?
Wheat.
So
Joe?
There's
yeah.
There's 5 resources in this land.
Oh.
and you try and take all of the resources.
Yeah, you take all the resources and you build settlements.
So you're trying to extract resources from this land. It's just like the regular world, right?
Yeah.
You're essentially everybody's trying to steal resources from the land. And then the cool thing that makes it really realistic is there's this little thing. What do they call that thing?
The Green Anarchist
Piece? Well, we call it the Green Anarchist Piece.
Oh, you mean the robber.
The robber, yes. The robber is actually like an anti-Sim.
The Green Anarchist.
Well, that's what we call him. Because when the robber lands...
like, it's a black piece. I don't know why you're calling it green.
Well, listen. When it lands on your spot, you can no longer extract resources from it. So it's essentially like... some yeah. kid in Santa Cruz or something that just showed up and started, like, you know, forest squatting and said, no more. So it's kind of realistic. I know some people hate the game because they say that it's fucked up. It is fucked up. It's a fucked up game.
But it's fun.
I mean, in terms of, like, yeah, social fucked upness, like, it is definitely based on, like, the premises of, you know, coming to, like, a new land where it's, like, a blank slate and...
it's colonial.
There's not. It's yeah. It's colonial as fuck. But you could also, if you don't look deeper into it and you just take it at face value, there could be in a fantasy world just an empty island with nothing on it that you settle.
I feel like the fact that it is so realistic is what makes it, like, I don't know.
How did you guys come across this game? Like, did somebody introduce this game to you or did you guys...
K-Lore.
Yeah,
K-Lore. And then we played this game a bunch with our friends. In one weekend, and then we played a show in Santa Barbara, and this person was like, yeah, I just dumpstered, like, Settlers of Catan, but I don't know what I'm going to do with it. What? I don't really want it. And we were like, holy shit, can we have it? They were like, yes. And it had the expansion pack, so a lot of people could play. And then she gave it to us.
We have it. We can play.
You can dumpster Settlers of Catan?
Apparently you can.
And this person is cool, too. Like, we see her around. Yeah. And she's got a kid, too.
Yeah, she has
a
kid.
She's punk with a kid who dumps her Settlers of Catan.
That's awesome.
She's riot parents.
Sounds right up your alley.
She's a riot parent, yeah.
So, well, what does that mean to you, riot parents?
There's actually, like, I was going to say, does anybody read Rad Dad? But probably not. I mean,
no.
So, there's a guy named Thomas who writes a zine called Rad Dad. And
not that Thomas.
That's not you.
Not me. And I want to
say... if I'd come across that in another context, I would have thought it was you.
Yeah. Yeah, but he spells his name differently. So, okay. You know. But anyhow, he's got three kids, I believe, and he writes about, like, parenting, and I guess you asked me to define it. He defines it better than me. He actually wrote, like, a list of things, like, that involve radical parenting, which I thought was pretty cool.
It's one of Tommy's old... profile pictures on Facebook.
Silly. But yeah, I think it just involves, like, pretty much, like, you know, you have a kid, your kid goes to school, the school teaches your kid weird things. How do you teach your child that those things are not true? Or how do you, like, take your kid out of that school and raise them differently? Or, you know, how do you parent a child differently? I mean, there's so many things involved in parenting.
Where could we find a copy of this book?
On our bookshelf behind you.
For those of us listening that are interested in catching a copy for themselves, would you know where we could purchase one or acquire one?
Is it a book
online
or
is it
a zine?
Google it.
Well, he does zines, but he did release a collection into a book form, and I think you can get it at AK Press.
Okay, cool.
Probably PM Press, too, I believe.
Awesome.
Or next time you have a book fair, they're always at book fairs.
Mm-hmm. Good to know.
Or any radical bookstore.
Probably not any of them.
A lot of them.
Oh, there's also, for the mothers out there, there's a cool little zine called Hip Mama. That's kind of like the Rad Dad. But Hip Mama's a little bit... I actually don't regularly read Hip Mama, but sometimes I like to read the articles because they have really good ones, and I should probably read it more often. But it's much more professional looking than Rad Dad. Yeah. It's a very nice presentation. Rad Dad's like shitty punk zine style.
Was that something that you looked for, or did you just come across it?
I don't know.
I feel like we just found it at, like, an anarchist book fair.
Something.
And you were like, whoa, Rad Dad, that's rad. Yeah. I'm going to read this shit. Because parenting is a big part of your life when you have a kid, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes,
right? So it's exciting. It's not like... the punk scene is not, like, the most friendly to children all the time.
Yeah.
And the anarchist scene. And so when you find other parents or find things that you can relate to about that, because it's such a big part of your life, it's exciting. It's special.
There's, like, in the punk scene, there's also robbers, kind of like in Settlers of Catan. They're green anarchists, and they sometimes hate children.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
You know, those, like, anti, like, you know, having children thing.
I feel like a lot of people feel that way until they have kids. Or until, like, somebody they know has kids. They're like, yeah. I used to be terrified of children. They scared the shit out of me. I barely started like holding my nephew and he's 4. But they're awesome. Children are great. Children are super cool.
Yeah, they're important. They're like, I don't know. I feel like raising kids is one of the most radical things you could do. You know,
trying to do it right.
A lot of punks like Emma Goldman, and Emma Goldman had a lot of contemplations in her diary or her journal about whether or not she wanted to have children. Ultimately decided not to, but sometimes throughout the journal regretted that decision. I think it's worth mentioning. People like her. Yeah. Punk people like her.
Did you find that like a lot of the stuff in there was stuff you had already been thinking about, or like, I mean, how much did it inform your parenting? And not just Rad Dad. I'm sure there's other stuff that y'all have read.
Well, I think it's just like really big questions, like how to deal with like things on gender come up in there, which I think is really cool. Like, how do we? I have a daughter, and my daughter, as like a punk parent, when she's growing up, I like want her to be exposed to things that are like gender neutral and things that are like not specifically like girl-y or boyish. And she gravitates towards like things that would be considered very girly. And
she wants to be a princess.
Yeah, and I'm just like, I try to like stop that, but then at a certain point, I'm like reading the zine, and it's really not my place.
Just let her evolve into whatever. Yeah,
it's just really not my place to try and tell, like, try and control her life. And I think I realized, like, as a parent and as a punk and as like a radical rad dad, you know, it's difficult for me to like kind of find where my place is as in like being her parent. So it's like a lot of questions like that. And throughout the zine, there's like questions about older kids too. Like, you know, one of the zines, like his son like starts watching like internet porn and he's like 13 and he's like, what the fuck do I do? You know, like and that's a really like good question. Yeah. What do you do? Like it's like, I don't want to just ignore it, but you know,
you don't want to shame him either and make sex a terrible thing.
So I don't know. I mean, we're pretty like open with Riley about like she knows about everything. Sex and everything. Yeah. So she knew about it since she was pretty young. And I think that that's important. And I mean, on a side note, radical parenting, I think that it's really important to explain sex to children, because we talk about consent in our culture and children don't even know what sex is until they're like too old to like understand consent. You know what I mean? It's too late. Like if you start really young, then like consent comes in with that. It's just like, oh, this is sex. This is not something I want or something I do want. Kids are oftentimes assaulted in our world, and it's a really shitty thing to have to deal with. And if they just knew what they were getting themselves into earlier on, I think it'd be much easier to identify when things were not going correctly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Because you hear a lot of kids that are survivors of that, you know, like when you hear them talk about it years later or whatever, it's like they didn't know what was even happening, or maybe that it was a bad thing, and because it was like so sheltered. I just watched this movie called Spotlight that's about the investigative journalist team in Boston that uncovered in the early 2000s like the huge Catholic priest scandal. And in the movie, you know, there's a lot, I mean, it's fictionalized, but there's like a lot of survivors talking about stuff like that. And
yeah, it's definitely difficult to growing up and having experienced something like that. It's definitely difficult to make sense of, like, I'm sure it's difficult to make sense of like what is sexually okay to feel, you know, in a situation and what isn't. It's hard to know what's right. Like it's easy to feel dirty and like shame and not be able to appreciate your sexuality. Everybody deals with that kind of stuff differently, but yeah, you know, growing up in this shitty place where there are predators like all over the place, it's good to educate children about that young.
I wish more people would talk to their children about it. I mean, so often it's like it's this weird thing that like they're too young to understand, or they're too young to like, you, what it is, so is you as a parent don't feel like explaining it, and it's fucking lazy.
Yeah. Like, yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah, I think there's like a Louis C.K. bit where he's like, you know, people's argument against gay marriage is like, well, what am I supposed to tell my kids? He's like, well, it's not my fault. You don't want to talk to your kids.
Yeah. People should talk to their kids. But so that's, to me, like, radical parenting involves, like, just doing things differently than what, you know, what is done in our society.
So on the topic of sex, they're talking to kids about that then. So was that something that, like, Riley had asked you about, or that you, like, took time and was like, okay, this is what we're going to talk about this now? Or, and I don't know, I guess... How did that happen?
And how old was she when you decided to have this discussion with her, or when the discussion came about?
I mean, I didn't have, like, the first discussion with her, I don't think. But there's definitely been times where she has asked me about it. I usually don't just randomly be like, okay, I'm going to talk to Riley about sex today, you know? Sure. It generally is, like, if something comes up, we were, like, on a camping trip, and her friend were, like, playing with these two Barbies, and they were, like, rolling on each other and doing stuff. All and she was like, that. Yeah. And they were like kissing and she was like, they're having sex. And I was like, what? Cause I just heard it from behind me. And I was like, what are you guys playing? You know? And I like inquired and they kind of like got a little embarrassed, but then they were like, okay, we want to tell you about it. And so they were like telling me about it and what they thought they felt like it was. They were like, they're kissing and like rolling.
That's really awesome that she felt like she could confide that in you. Cause a lot of children don't feel that way with the adults they grow up around. The, you know, being able to have that type of trust in your relationship with your children is probably one of the most important things in raising a child, is knowing that they can come to you and talk to you. But yeah,
we definitely try to keep that open, you know, and like encouraging her, like, I feel like we do, to have conversations instead of just being like, because I said so, or like, you know what I mean, like shutting down that conversation. We try to keep her curious.
Well, Riley has four parents.
The co-parent collective.
Yeah, we call it a collective. We have co-parent collective meetings.
That's awesome.
And we've been explaining sex to Riley probably since before she understood what we were saying. And I think that I always thought it was important, you know, as like a person who experienced like things growing up that I shouldn't have. I felt like I wish I would have known all of these things. So having a child, I was like, there's no way, like, I'm gonna wait till she's 3 or 4, because a lot of kids are assaulted before they're even that age.
And
if they can just understand, like, hey, if somebody does this, or this is what sex is, and this is what it means when somebody does that. You know what I mean?
And, you know, like, as a result of a lot of other children being assaulted at super young ages, the result often is other children acting it out on other children, and that makes it seem amongst children more acceptable.
True.
Kind of. And like, and so many kids, believe it or not, so many kids, they go through it, and it's and nobody wants to ever talk about it the right way. Everybody just, it seems like so many parents, they just shame it and shut it up, and that's so unhealthy for individuals' personal growth.
I agree.
So the co-parenting collective. So
great name. Yeah.
That's great.
Are the other two parents then on a similar terms with like the riot parent ideal, or like,
I think that they don't think about it as much, but I feel like a lot of their like beliefs are radical, more so than normal people. Normies. I guess. Like, you know, the other parents at the school, like, I feel like it's definitely something that they probably consider every once in a while. They probably just don't spend as much time talking about it, but I think their values like lie very close.
People, as people like get older and do things, I feel like I've seen a lot of my friends and family become very exhausted by life, and, you know, I mean, that whole thing about working. And so, yeah, they don't show up to like demonstrations or sit around and like discuss like new literature that comes out, you know, but they are like, they're on the same wavelength. We talk about things. We don't always agree, and that's cool. You know, we're looking at schools for Riley, and we don't agree on the schools that we like. So, and that's I think that's all normal. I think like it's really I think it's actually good. Riley has like a good balance, and I think that's another thing that I think is really great about Riley's experience as a child with so many parents is that she's able to get a lot of different perspectives other than just mine, or, you know.
I'm going to go off a little here, if that's cool. How has raising Riley affected your guys' music, affected like the way your whole perspective on the punk scene? How is this awesome little girl evolved? Do you guys led to the evolution of what you guys are?
I don't know how to answer that. That's a good question.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I can say as much as far as like our music goes, but like as far as like me in my life and the way that I feel about things and, you know, becoming one of Riley's co-parents when she was 4, you know, and like I was more of like the like, oh, fuck kids. Like, I don't want to be around kids. Like, I've always loved kids as like I've wanted to work with them, but
the idea of them.
Yeah. Like, I wanted, like, my own space, and, like, certain things were, like, not for kids. Like, kids shouldn't be in this. They shouldn't be exposed to this. Like, because that's how I grew up. So, like, I think that parenting has been, like, really good for me because it's, like, challenged me in ways that, like, I never would know. And I feel like in a lot of ways it's made me more radical because I can see how, like, easily I can become, like, authoritarian in, like, a situation and be like, that's not cool. And, like, there's, I mean, this is a really bad example, but, like, I remember Riley was, like, 5 or something, and I had these waffles, and she was like, those aren't vegan. And I was like, they're vegan, Riley. And she was like, no, they're not vegan. And I was like, I'm positive that they are. And then I, like, read the box, and I was like, oh, my God, they're not vegan. Like,
that's great.
I'm so sorry. And I felt so bad, and I was like, I'm so sorry, Riley, that, like, I didn't believe you. Like, I dismissed you because you're younger than me and like you don't read the boxes. Like, I don't know. But she knew, and like, I don't know, just things like that happen, and I'm like, wow, like I need to like be like aware of how I treat people, you know. I don't know, she's just changed me as a person, and I love her. The little girl.
Yeah, and I think that speaks to something that I've thought about for a long time of like, it, restricting things based on age is a form of discrimination to me. And like, that's something about punk that I've loved so much is, you know, the all ages aspect of it. And like, it's so crazy to talk to people sometimes who are like, you know, where that's not like a normal thing. And it's, I don't know, it's something that gets me really worked up, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's so normal to so many people that I can't think of a specific example of like when I've talked about that with someone, but I know that there's been times where it's like, no, like you're just because someone is this age or whatever, that doesn't mean this thing about them or,
yeah. Oh, yeah. I feel like people talk about that when they're talking about shows. They're like, you're going to go to that show? It's like 18 and over. Like, you want to be around 18-year-olds? You're just like, what? Okay. All ages all the time.
Yeah, I don't know how, like, it actually, like, being a parent has, like, led into the music or how that works exactly. I can say that, like, there's a lot of things involved around being a parent that changed the way I think of things. When I started playing music, I was, like, 29 years old. First time I played an instrument, a little late in life. And
you're never too old.
And I just wanted to play. I heard this girl playing banjo and I was like, oh, that's a really cool instrument. But she was playing like banjo, like regular like folk banjo music. And I was like, that's cool. I really like that. And I wonder if I could like play punk music on that, you know, because I grew up listening to punk. And so I'd do it at home and I'd play songs in the bathroom while Riley would take a bath. I'd try and like write these songs, and it was terrible. It was awful. They were awful songs. They still are, but they were even worse then. And she would just like want me to play, even if she would just want me to play these songs, and I'd write songs for her, you know,
constant like encouragement.
Yeah, so she'd want me to. So I think that had a huge like impact, and like she encouraged me to play music. She was like, "Yeah, you should do it." And as like I came back into punk like after a few years of not doing anything in punk. And I kind of didn't really like punk. I was kind of like, fuck this shit. Like, I don't know if I want to do that. I don't want to hang out with these fucking assholes.
That's, like, that's not unreasonable.
So it wasn't like, but then I thought to myself, like, there was these things, like, as a father and a person who, like, when my daughter was born, I had to get a job. and I worked, like, 16-hour days. A lot, you know, I worked long hours and I became very exhausted and very jaded about life and my old anarchist principles and like, you know, like all that stuff that I thought about when I was a teenager had become more real. it's so funny as you're a kid. I'm ranting, but as a kid, like, you're like angry about these things, but you don't know where to place it. You know, you're like, oh, fuck school and fuck jobs and fuck church and, you know, fuck you and I'm gonna get drunk, right? And like, as like, yeah. And as an adult, like, it's like suddenly, like, some of the things that I thought sucked as a kid really did suck. Like, when I actually had to do them,
it was like a fucking living nightmare.
Yeah, really. I was really tired, and I started writing songs about like being tired and like not liking work and not liking the way like things were, and I'd play them for Riley, and she was cool with it, you know. So. Yeah,
she loves it.
I mean, she's okay. She doesn't love it, but
she loves when you play for her. Yeah, yeah. I don't know if she likes our band that much. She's a much better singer than me.
She is a good singer.
I saw a video that one of you guys posted on Facebook. By the way, that was adorable. She was doing a Sia cover.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that was so awesome. It was so beautiful.
It choked me up. It
makes me cry. Yeah. I can't watch it.
She originally wanted to do a Beyonce song, and her singing instructor was like, that is too hard for you. So she switched over to the Sia song. But
maybe
she'll,
next time.
She'll work on it.
I'm going to go off a little again. I'm super curious. You mentioned that, you know, you started writing music as a result of growing up. Yeah. You know, like... and you know, you would write songs and share them with Riley. Do you both write the lyrics for your music, or do you guys write songs together? Or
no, not at all.
So
Thomas writes the songs. Yeah.
Well, you write some of the songs.
I have some songs that I've written, but they're not recorded on anything.
Not yet.
But we're working on it.
No, we're not.
But yeah, we were. I mean, we have at certain times in our life. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, Thomas writes the Moon Bandit songs, and I play the violin sometimes.
You guys are an awesome, awesome duo. Like, you both, like, just presence in general, you guys contribute a lot to each other.
Thank you. So. That's nice. We like each other.
Yeah, we like playing. We like playing music together.
Yeah.
Astrid has great songs that she writes, and we play them at punk shows. If you come to one of the punk shows, you'll see some of the songs that she writes.
The one of the songs that you've written, the one, I don't know if you have, there's two songs that I know that you've written. There's the vegan song and the feminism song,
okay.
As I've heard them in my head.
Yes.
What are they actually called?
Well, the vegan song does not exist anymore. I don't even know.
You don't ever play that song.
Yeah, I forgot about that song. The other one is called Survive.
Right, yes.
Yeah.
Part of my interpretation of the lyrics of that song are like patriarchy as a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
And was that intentional at all, or did I just interpret it that way?
No, that's cool. I'm fine with that. Yeah, you know, it's confusing because, like, I feel... Like, when I write songs, I just write these things, and then I'm like, I don't really know what it's about. It's just something I wrote. Like, I don't really... And so then I try to, like, make up what I think it's about and how it relates to me. And, like, I feel very connected to that song, and it makes me emotional. Like, when I sing it, I'm like, and I get, like, shaky and angry. But, yeah, it's pretty much about patriarchy, I think, and how it's affected my life. I mean, I definitely think about it more in, like, a personal way than I do on, like, a social way. But looking at, like, the bigger picture, it's definitely, yeah, patriarchy is a good way to talk about it.
Yeah, just the repetition of eating at your ear.
Oh, just, yeah, okay. I was, like, zombie.
Yeah, that always, for me, conjures up that image. And, like, just the repetition, like how many times it's repeated and makes, I don't know. That was just like one of the things I think about when I hear that song.
eating at your brain.
Yeah.
Yeah, eating,
I guess,
at your brain.
Yeah. I mean, I think that comes from like things that I've experienced that like I never like identified as like having to do with patriarchy, and how, you know, actually, when I got more into feminism, how those things really started to bother me, like things that had happened in my past that I had never considered in that light before. I was always like, those are just things that happen when you're a kid and you're stupid and you drink a lot and like
You started
those are just, yeah, and I started to, like, identify them, and I was like, wow, this feels shitty.
You started developing anxieties over them, and...
Yeah, I started getting angry about it. I wasn't angry about it before. I was just, dismissive of it.
Well, that's... So. Honestly, anger can be a super fucking healthy thing. That's... That feeling when you're writing a song and you're singing a song that you're about shit that you're really pissed off about, like, it makes you want to cry, but it feels really fucking good, and at least you're getting it out.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
It's a good outlet.
So I'm super fucking curious. Where did you get Moon Bandits? What's the story behind that?
Oh, damn it.
You're like, Tommy's hiding behind the mic, right? Or he was.
It's actually you know what? It's more like lovey than what people think.
Oh yeah.
It's
you don't have to.
It's personal, like, I'll put it to you this way. It's an inside thing about the two of us, and it's pet. It involves pet names.
Yeah,
which is funny, right? Because I don't think people think that when they hear the name.
I don't know how
definitely
it
not.
Name.
No,
yeah. Astrid came up with it, and I was like, "That's great. We'll use that." And she was like, "I don't know if I like it."
Yeah, I was like, "I don't like that." But then I made like a wood carving at it because I was in printmaking class. And then Thomas was like, cool, this is like our band logo. And I was like, okay.
That was that.
Yeah, that was that.
Been a band. How long have you guys been making music together?
Well, pretty much since we met. Like we met, and I just started playing the banjo, like I said, for Riley, and Astrid was like, I always wanted to play the violin.
Yeah.
And I was like, you should totally play the violin.
When did you barely pick it up? How long ago? That's so awesome.
Well, we played our first show and I had been playing for 2 months. So it was very evident.
How long ago was that?
Oh, it's been...
I guess it's been like 4 years.
Gosh, almost 4.5 now? 4?
Yeah, like 4.
Did you guys... When I ran into you at that taxpayer show, did you guys just start playing like around that time?
No, I think we'd been playing
for maybe like a year. Okay. I don't remember when that was, though.
That was...
Well, I remember...
Like 4 years ago.
Okay. Oh, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah. But it was before you started... it was before you guys started doing all your work at Bridgetown.
I think we played that show, though.
I don't... Remember.
Oh, the taxpayer show? One with the spoken word before?
Yeah, I think it was just...
Oh, maybe
yeah,
not.
No, we played that show.
Yeah, because Bridgetown started about 2 years ago. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I remember that the first time we played together was 2011, because I had just graduated from high school. And it was like one of your first... Or like in your first handful of shows.
Yeah, when I think of like the early times of Moon Bandits, I think of like...
That's
the great.
That's about when I heard about you guys about around 2011.
Yeah, yeah. And like Shady Characters and
Last
those, Legs.
That was one of the first phase one. Phase one.
Yeah, Tribal Cafe phase one.
Cafe, we have it categorized one. In our head. We have like Tribal Cafe, like the all different color space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The floating around with no actual space to play.
Yeah.
Then Bridgetown. Bridgetown's been a long lasting. Thing. Yeah.
Well, let's go through that because that sounds interesting to me. So, what's phase one to you? What is that?
Oh, it's like Shady Characters, Alexander
the
Great.
Oh, the Manx. Yeah, and like carving every single fucking poster that we like.
I have so many
shows that
we
played. Yeah, I used to like woodblock all of these posters for all the shows, and I was like so bitter about people that had long band names because I was like, you motherfuckers, my hands hurt.
Benny the Jet Rodriguez.
Benny the Jet. Yeah.
That was phase one.
Yeah. Blood Buddies.
Benny the
Blood
Jet Buddies. Was almost like Lauren and I were starting a band. That was almost Benny
I
the Jet
it.
And Moon Bandits almost didn't happen because Lauren and I were going to start a band.
Yeah. So yeah, phase one was great. It was so inspiring because it was like, God, we're all just like doing this thing and no one wants to book our show. So like, we should just play together. We should just play together at this cafe and we'll just book our own shows and we'll just do this thing. And it's like, it like makes my heart feel warm. I don't know. It was such a good time. It's like inspiring.
It was really like we would hit up like spaces, every space in LA that we could think of. And like we'd hit up other bands. And it's really difficult if you're like, if you play like DIY punk music
and you don't have like the right friends,
like that shit's a cool club. I fucking hate that. Like it's like
it's really like kind of, it seems really elitist and like, it's the word. I can't think of the word. It's happening, Joe. Joe, mid-interview. It's happening. I need food.
Oh, you need food?
No, not really.
We have some food.
It's an excuse.
She just forgets words sometimes.
Yeah, nobody would book us. So, like, we were like, we looked around, we found a tribal cafe, and we were like, could we book a punk show here? And they were like, yeah.
You know what was kind of like intertwined in that too? Was like, we emailed Jang from Resistant Exist, and I like sent him this long thing, and I was like, hey, so I think our bands are like similar and we have like really similar ideals, and like I just really agree with what you're saying, and like I think that we should play a show together, and if this is something that you think you're interested in, like please email me back. Like I'd send these like really lengthy, like intense emails to people. And, like, no one ever responded. And Jang was like, I think this sounds fantastic. I'm setting up, like, this anarchist book fair. You should play it. And we, like, he totally set it up. And we played. And I was like, this is so cool.
And I love Jang. Like, as a punk kid growing up in L.A., like, Jang is, like, you know, he's like a historical figure, right? He's, like, a landmark. And, like, I would go see Resist. I don't know if anybody went to Resistant Exist shows growing up.
I have no idea who this is or what that band is.
So, growing up, Resistant Exist was, like, this crust-punk band. They're, like, anarcho-punk band that played in L.A. But his events were not just, like, punk events. Like the Black Panthers would come, and, like, the Brown Berets would come. And they'd have, like, a whole table set up about political prisoners. And, like,
the vegan activists. Yeah,
and as a punk kid, when I was, like, teenager, I was going to like street punk shows, and I stumbled into these, and it was where I got introduced to radical politics. Jang is like, to me, he was a big deal. So like, when Astro was like, Jang said that we could play this like book fair that he's setting up, I was like, fuck, we're gonna play a book fair that Jang's setting up. Like, that was awesome.
What year was that?
I don't know. 2012.
I think it was probably. I think it was probably the first year that we started playing music. I think it was probably 2011, because I feel like that was very close to the beginning of us playing, and like that's when we were like doing these shows and like doing all these fun things, and then we started playing these like political, like radical events, and like got really into like both of those categories of playing shows.
Yeah, those were great, and the Jang events were awesome because nobody cares that you're playing.
Yeah, because it's great. They're there, so we could be really bad.
Yeah, nobody cares.
No one cares.
Yeah, I think I've been to a few anarchist book fairs. I went to one in 2012, I think. Or maybe it was 2013 in, like, South LA.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my first introduction to that. Yeah, it was a really awesome experience. I don't remember who played, though. I actually think I saw you guys there. Yeah,
probably.
Normally, he wouldn't have bands. He would have, like, he would hit us up because he'd be like, oh, I got this, like, you know, I got somebody doing some hip hop.
You guys actually did play. Sorry.
Yeah. And then he'd be like, you guys could play too, because like you're acoustic.
Yeah. It was really cool. It was super diverse. It was a rad mix of awesome shit. Yeah.
Yeah. If Jang books an event, I would suggest everybody goes to it.
Yeah. Go.
Cause they're always good. They're always good.
So I remember like my recollection of the tribal cafe stuff and like
oh, we really trailed off. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. It's fine. No, that was all interesting stuff.
Yeah, it's great.
The first time we played and with you, and it was the first show that we had played that we hadn't booked for ourselves in Kevin's backyard. And I remember that I had hit you up a couple times on Facebook about just like, hey, can we hop on this show? Which is like the most annoying way to me to like ask to play a show. Like, because then being on the receiving end of that, sometimes I'm like, well, the show's already booked. Like, I can't, like, if you would have emailed me, I'll keep you in mind for the next one. But yeah, so I did that to you a couple times, and then like met you in person at a Ramshackle Glory show. And then there was some show at the Tribal Cafe, and you had messaged me like, earlier in the day and was like, this band dropped off. Do you guys want to play? And I was at a movie or something and I got home. It was 6 o'clock and the show was at 7. And I saw it and was like, yes, we can play. Even though I'm like, I was an hour away. So then I had, and I had all the band's gear at my house, which was lucky. So I just panically packed my mom's car full of the stuff. And my mom, I remember my mom came out and was like, okay, you need to just take a breath and make sure that you didn't forget anything. And like I had called Eliav and Kevin and I was like, can you be at this show in an hour? And Eliav was like, yes. And Kevin didn't have a car at the time, but he was luckily he just happened to be in the area.
That's awesome.
So I like went and picked him up and then we got there like right on time and then we played and the rest is history.
I remember that. That was like
you had hats.
Yeah, you had hats.
Yes.
And those were like the days. Oh, and IGAF. IGAF played all of those shows. Yeah. I just think of that as being our same band sometimes.
By the way, plug for IGAF's new album coming out very
soon. Oh, yeah, Holocene coming up. Holocene. Artwork by me. Maybe. But yeah, so yeah, and like all of our friends used to come to the shows still, like our family members and stuff. And I remember that. And I remember I have a picture on my cell phone still of like me and like I think Tiffany and Tana, like my two random friends, wearing like the hats that you passed out.
Yeah, we would bring a bunch of funny hats to the show and then had a bit in the middle of our set. We're just like, oh man, you know, you guys are a good audience, but there's just, you're missing something. They'd be like, oh, hats. And then we'd pass out like this.
Dude, those were
bin
good
of hats.
Bits.
Yeah.
I was proud of those.
The DMV reading? I was like, what the fuck? Who is this band? I love them.
The first time we saw you all play, we were like, we really need to step up our game.
Yeah, we were like, we are not this exciting. We're like, we're here to talk to you about some real serious issues that are going on.
This is
going to
be boring, so sit down.
Relax.
Yeah. I think also, maybe it wasn't that show, but the Manx had played one of the, I think it was either the first or second show that I had played with you, and like they had totally blown me away.
I remember
like the first second I was like, holy shit. And now they're my favorite LA band for sure now. Yeah. And that was like Zax, who's their mandolin player, that was his first show with them. And now it's crazy.
Yeah, that was those days we would book shows because we'd try and get like mostly all local bands. We just book a show and be like, okay, now we need to find bands to play. And
oh, a New York Taxi.
New York Taxi. Yes.
Yeah, we would just look for bands to play. That was fun. I mean, it was fun. I kind of miss, we should book a show at Travel Cafe.
We should.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
That's a reasonable distance for me to drive. I'm down.
Okay, let's make that happen.
It just sucks because, like, there's no, you know, I mean, I love Bridgetown, but it's so far for...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, even for you,
I still haven't even been. I've been, like, there has been awesome show after show, and I'm just like, so far. I don't drive. Yeah. But I really want to go. I can't believe I haven't even, I've never, like, I don't even know where it's at.
What?
Like, I know, La Puente. I know it's in La Puente, but I don't
plug
like,
it, you know?
You don't know the intersection.
Yeah, I don't know the intersection.
I don't know the intersection.
Like, I don't know
the intersection.
I know it's near Crewe.
Yeah. It trips me out. I feel like it's been there forever now, and like, I still haven't been.
Yeah. Bridgetown's great.
Going into their third year. That's a long time.
Yeah.
In punk standards, that's like historic. I don't... You know, when I was growing up, I used to go to a space called PCH Club. I always talk about that space. It was a very big deal to me. And they only lasted 3 years. So to me, it's like in my head, this space like was huge and was always around, but it was only 3 years. Weird.
Could you tell us a bit about Bridgetown for those of us who don't know what it is or are interested?
Yeah.
Wait. Sorry, but I don't want to get off.
Okay.
I like going through the phases. And we can arrive at Bridgetown through
that.
That's
true. So. That's true. Bridgetown is going to be our final phase. So
okay,
what
phase are we in now?
So
the phase of breaking.
Phase two.
Thanks, Joe.
What
Thanks
is,
for that.
What would
phase
you
two.
Consider phase two?
I mean, all different colors.
Yeah.
But that was so short-lived.
It was one summer, but that was such a good summer
for
me. I felt like
we played like 15 shows that summer, right? I just felt like in that, I remember looking at that period of time where we're just like, we play like show every week or something.
Yeah.
And there was always something fun happening at all different colors. And, like, the kids would, like, we would...
Disco balls falling.
Yeah. Great.
All different colors was, like, this warehouse downtown. On like, seventh. Across across the street from the American Apparel
and the factory, Greyhound station.
And the Greyhound station. Okay. And it was very... It was, like, a narrow... warehouse.
Yeah.
And
I think it's still there. I think they're still doing shows there.
It's a place, it's called like East 7th Punks with an X.
Punks or something.
And I have, it seems like a really like hardcore place. And I haven't been there and I don't know anything about it.
It looks like they mostly have like grind shop. My friends are in some death metal band called Exhausted Prayer and they play there. So death metal, if you're in a death metal band, maybe you can play there.
But yeah, that summer was awesome. Like, because. Andrew, the person who ran it, you'd just be like, can we do the show? And be like, yeah. And it was so easy. And there was, we had a hilarious experience there when our tour kickoff show was there. And the day before or something, he's like, oh, I have like a work meeting, so I'm not going to be able to be there. And it was like Friday night at 9 o'clock. So I don't, I have no idea if that was real or not. But he's
I
can't be there.
Strange work, so I'm sure.
Yeah. Maybe. And he was like, we're going to have to cancel or something. And I was like, oh, man. And then later he was like, okay, I'm going to give you the combination to the to like the metal thing that opened up the and gave it to me and was just like, yeah, go do it. And it was awesome. And like we got to keep all the money that we made, which really helped us like on the next couple of days of our tour. But yeah, it was just. It was so funny and awesome how loose it was. And maybe that's why it didn't last, but...
Yeah, All Different Colors was a thing. I mean, that was, like, phase two.
Yeah, we had so many great shows there. I mean... Yeah.
That was phase two.
Liz and Luke played there. Ooh, Cottontail.
That's what, like, you know, honestly, like, the Ramshackle Kids became our friends, like, somewhere in phase one. And phase two, like, that was, like...
Like, strengthened.
Oh, yeah. Like, those are some of our best friends in across the... Like, I'm sad they broke up. What are you going to do? But Liz and Luke
they're still
there.
Doing one more album. Just no more shows.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see if that album ever comes out. That's right. I'm calling you out, Ramshackle Boys.
Throw down. Yeah, no, those were really good times. I don't even know, like, what to say. Oh, Thistle played there. I got a concussion there because the disco bell that was, like, humongous fell on my head.
It was humongous and really high up.
Really high up. It was terrible.
How the hell did it fall on your head?
Oh, I don't know. I thought somebody threw something at me. I was so sad. I was like, oh my God.
That's the
kind of
look
I have. Threw something at me.
That was the Thistle show, right?
Yeah,
Thistle. I remember there were no microphones there. Also, another thing with that space was you were never sure what gear they were going to have.
Yeah.
And there were no microphones, and we were going to play, and we were like, and so I drove home, like, from downtown to Venice. Well, I think my mom was really nice and met us, like, halfway somewhere to get, but yeah. That was just a really chaotic
that
show.
That was a horrible time. We had to go to the hospital that night.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No.
Well, I remember you weren't going to go to the hospital, and we were like, you should go to the hospital.
Well, this ball falls on her head, and the look on her face was just so – she's so confused. And she just, like, stands there, and she looks behind us, and she's like, what happened? And we're like, this huge fucking disco ball just crushed your skull.
Were you bleeding? Like,
no.
It, like, cut my shoulder.
Ah.
And I'm pretty sure I just stood there. Like, I don't even think I flinched.
No, it was just, like, really confused. Like,
she was very confused.
Yeah, and then everybody was standing around me asking me what was wrong, and I was just like, I don't know. I think somebody just threw something at me, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's what I remember from phase two.
Also, and then there was a large part of phase two that I'm leaving out, actually, and I was Blood Orange.
Yeah, that's
was
true.
Huge for us. We played Blood Orange a lot.
Yes.
I've never been there.
What?
Wow.
Yeah,
that place is seriously far.
Yeah.
That's true. It's really far.
Like, I mean, I'll drive to VLHS for 2 hours in traffic, but to Riverside, that's like another hour.
I've only been there like twice. I had some friends that lived in Riverside, and we went just by chance. Like, it was open like around 3.
And I guess they're changing now. Too?
Yeah, Blood Orange is still going to exist, but
No, I think they're called something else now.
The space is called something else, but Blood Orange the Collective is still going to exist in another space, they're saying. I don't know. They're doing their thing. There's a new group. A lot of the newer collective members of Blood Orange have started a new group, and I think that maybe Blood Orange just didn't suit what they were trying to do anymore. So it's cool. I'm glad they're expanding.
Yeah.
You know, it seems cool to me like that there's now two collectives, not just one. Yeah, but Blood Orange was a huge.
Yeah, I feel like that ties in with like getting involved in the shows that we played with Jang, because it was like another radical space.
That's
and
how we got linked into Blood Orange.
Yeah, we played there with Resist and Exist, but then they kept asking us back, and we would play like demos they were having there or like radical events in Riverside, and we just became friends with the folks out there. And
I remember one of my most memorable shows, like, this is not even a show, but they called us out there because they were like doing a demonstration in front of the
police station.
Instead of in front of the prison.
Oh, in
the Riverside prison.
Yeah.
And so we came out there. They asked us if we would come out and play music. So we were like playing music in front of the prison, in front of like this wall of cops, and then hung out there yelling at cops for like a few hours. I don't know. Blood Orange was huge for us. It was like, that was at the same time as All Different Colors. We would actually a lot of times do shows, like bands would come on tour and we would book them at, we would book one show at All Different Colors and one at Blood Orange.
Yeah. Well, that's how far away.
Yeah. They're really far away. Those were like fucked up times. I'd be so tired.
Yeah.
I'd be like, I can't believe we're driving to Riverside. And then we were playing tomorrow night. Like, I don't know. Good times though.
Yeah. So then there was a couple shows of The Smell in between.
I think that. Moon Bandits only played The Smell once.
Yeah, we played that.
But IGAF played.
I mean, The Smell's really hard to book.
Yeah.
But yeah, we had a couple shows of The Smell, and then that incident happened at the Ramshackle Glory show, and I don't think I'll ever be able to book a show there again. So, oh well, moving on.
Yeah. Yeah. We've talked about that on the show before.
Oh, did you? Yeah.
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 I think our first episode.
It was our first episode. Yeah. We were finding common grounds, and it just so happened that we had been to a few multiple different shows and stuff. We were just getting to know each other. That came up.
That's awesome.
So if you want to hear about that, go to episode one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to episode one.
Don't listen to it.
We're not talking about the Phantom Menace, okay?
Yeah, I don't watch that one either. You know what? I'm going to take that back. I really enjoyed it when I was a kid. I'm not going to lie. Like, when I was a kid.
And that's how Lonnie got kicked off the show.
Well, I was a kid. Like, I'm not going to lie.
I'm just kidding. It's a great film. I love Jar Jar Binks and his character.
Fuck you. Fuck you, Joe.
Okay, you can stay.
Oh, shit.
I don't know. So that was phase two.
So phase three.
Somehow Star Wars weeded its way into phase two.
I feel like I want phase three to be like our touring, because that's been a really big part of our band. No? You don't think so?
Yeah, no, you're right. No, I don't know. Phase three.
I don't know. We went on a bunch of tours. We did a bunch of tours.
Phase three has been nonstop touring.
Yeah. I don't know.
How many tours have you been on?
A lot. I don't know. And Bridgetown. We toured the West Coast twice.
We've toured the Midwest.
We toured the Midwest.
The East Coast, the South-ish. I guess the Southeast.
Yeah, the Southeast.
Yeah.
We toured
the Southwest.
And then we toured Europe. That was crazy.
Yeah.
That was recently, right?
Yeah.
Really recent, yeah.
That was the weirdest thing.
That was
thing.
The summer.
Yeah, that was the weirdest thing. This kid that, like, a while ago had sent me a message on...
Oh, Ryan's house. That's a phase.
Ryan's house is part of phase two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I forgot about Ryan.
That's how we went on that European tour, like from meeting Giz at Ryan's house.
Oh, shit.
And being like,
Ryan, if you're listening, we're sorry. I cannot believe we left out Ryan's house.
From
So Ryan's house was a garage.
He lives in Canada.
Yeah.
From France.
From France. Okay.
Yeah,
I thought you said from friends. I was like,
yeah, holy
no.
shit. Yeah, I met Giz.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2012 PixFest.
Yeah.
Him and his buddy Nico, they were in a band called. Bad fuck.
Bad.
Oh.
No.
Extra medium.
Extra medium. Yeah. Extra medium. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nico lives out here now.
They're awesome.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's how that tour happened. This person like messaged us on Facebook and was like, hey, I think kind of like what I did to Jang was like, yeah, I feel like our bands have like similar ideals and like things that we talk about. If you ever want to tour Europe, hit us up.
That's awesome.
We'll go on tour with you. So that was Old Trees, who's awesome and just broke up, I think. So that's sad. Yeah, Moon Bandit's tour just destroyed them. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, we went on tour with Old Trees and Giz, and it was really amazing.
So, like, what's the difference between touring in America versus what your European tour was like?
Oh my gosh.
Well, I mean, I didn't know.
Yeah, go.
People are really fucking nice.
Really nice.
Like, in America, the first thing that stands out to me is people are always doing you favors, which is really nice. I'm glad that people are so nice to do you a favor and book you a show and give you a place to stay. And, like, I really appreciate that. In Europe, they don't make it feel – it's not a favor. They don't make you feel like they're doing you a favor. It's really like they really want you to be there, feels like, you know. I mean, that's what it feels like anyways. Maybe they're just really good liars. But
that's awesome.
But they, like, you know, they
so
don't,
hospitable. Like, they wanted you to stay at their house. Like, people, make us multiple dinner? People, they'd be like, you can stay with us, or you can stay with us, or you can stay with us. Like, everybody wanted you to stay with them. And we've played shows in the U.S. where we're like, ask the people who booked the show, and they're like, I don't know. Like, we don't, you know, I don't really have a place for you to stay. So we're like, okay. And then when we play, we're like, hey, if anybody, like, has a place for us to stay, that would be cool, like, while we're playing, you know, and hopefully somebody will offer.
They normally do.
Yeah.
I mean, normally somebody offers here. It's just there, it's like people would make us, like, dinner, really fancy, elaborate dinners, and then breakfast in the morning. And they're just so kind. And another huge part was I felt like touring can be a financial burden. Anybody that's in, like, a shitty punk band knows, like, you go on tour and sometimes, like, you don't make enough money to pay for the gas to get to the next show. But, like, in Europe, like, they always have gave you enough money to get to the next show, like, always. And that's a really generous thing. I feel like people really, like, support DIY music. A lot of the shows we were playing were Pay What You Can. And we play Pay What You Can shows here. And, I mean, I don't care. If you don't have money, you don't have money. But I just felt like people were more – maybe they just have more money. I don't fucking know how it works. But people would throw money in the hat and, you know, you'd be able to get to the next show.
Yeah.
And there was three bands. We were touring as three bands. Two cars, three bands. And we made it. We made it.
We all made it, yeah.
Yeah, that was a big deal. I remember ranting. I'm going on too long about it. But I remember thinking, I don't know how this is going to work. There's two cars, three bands – touring Europe, like, we're very small bands. Like, it's already hard enough touring just as one band, you know? That's the way I was kind of thinking about it. But we'll do it.
And yeah, I mean, in the U.S., we just tour in one car. It's not like we don't have equipment or anything. It's just banjo and violin. Yeah. So we always just tour in a car.
Yeah.
And sometimes we can have trouble getting gas money.
Well, I mean,
We're fine, but yeah.
Do you think that maybe the punk scene is less organized here? Or less, like, there's less of a sense of community here than...
Oh, for sure.
I don't know. I guess this is kind of like the grass is always greener, but I feel like there's things that make it easier just to live in general.
I feel like a lot of kids that would probably be throwing your shows are, like, somewhat street, you know, yeah, like, street kids that they like the idea of throwing you a show, but when it comes to helping you out with actually getting you a place to stay, it's like, oh fuck, I didn't think about that. I just thought, like, the idea of you guys playing would be really fucking awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of things that play into it. First of all, like, one of the things that I noticed when we were in Europe was a lot of the spaces we played mostly all squats. And most of the spaces we would play, they were very politically active. They were very involved in their community. There was a lot of shit going on. There was old people and young people. There was little kids at shows.
Yeah.
Like, lots of kids at shows.
Awesome.
Lots of old people at shows. So I felt like the community itself pulls from many different angles.
Right.
I remember being at the shows and watching these people argue about anarchism. Like, it's, I mean, anybody that's an anarchist that hangs out with anarchists has probably seen anarchists argue with each other because they disagree with, like, tactics or philosophy or, like...
anything.
Anything, for that matter, because we never agree, right? Well, generally, in L.A., when we don't agree, we're like, fuck that person, I'm never going to see them again, and we avoid seeing them. Like, that's a thing. Like, that person's, like, shitty, they said this thing, and I didn't like that they said that, and now I never go to the space that they're involved in, or I never see them again.
Well, Ollie's just shitty in that way in general. Just, like, everything.
Yeah. Well, what I noticed there is, like, these people would argue with each other, and then by the end of the night, they'd be hanging out. And
that's
I think it feels to me like the squats and the spaces, the centers they have there, the people just deal with each other.
Yeah.
They just deal with each other, even when they don't agree.
That's super fucking cool. I wish more people were like that. I wish that it was more like that here. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of, like, like distancing yourself like from like different areas of the punk scene, and like there's a lot of clickiness, and like there seems to definitely be a lot of drama almost like in the LA yeah. punk scene. It's weird. It's weird. Yeah.
No, there's no drama.
I don't know. You can edit that out.
I was being sarcastic.
There's no reason to edit that out. No,
I think it's really valid, actually, to say that.
Yes. Well, I don't know. Yeah,
I'll say it. There's a lot of drama.
Yeah, it doesn't seem. It seems like it's really clicky, and
there's
kind
just
of
a lot of conflict that's not resolved, and people aren't willing to talk about it.
There's a lot of disagreements, and then people aren't willing to
discuss it and
yeah.
agree to disagree.
No,
they just hate each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I feel you. It's bullshit. Well, let's try to do something about that. Let's hope this helps get people to talk.
Yeah.
But so that being said, coming back to touring in the U.S., I like touring in the U.S. There are things that, like, I'm not saying that it's better touring in Europe because I don't really feel like flying that far again.
Right.
It's fucking far. It took a long time to get there. That was not a fun part. But touring in the U.S. is awesome. I like touring here. I want to tour in Mexico next, and we've actually been in contact with a few people, and it looks like if we can, we might do it soon.
Awesome.
Maybe. That's the next tour I want to do, down to Mexico City and back, so that would be great. And, you know, it's funny, we would talk to kids before, and they're like, oh, there's no folk punk scene in Mexico, like, but, like, lately I've been getting in contact with people, and they're like, yeah, we can book you shows, you know, and that's awesome.
In our last episode that was posted with Nick, we were talking about, you know, kind of the evolution of like the folk punk scene in Southern California, and basically our impression of it was that kind of around before 2011, it seemed like there was nothing. And I was wondering if you had the same interpretation of that or impression of that, or if it was just us being like, this is when we started, so this is when we think everything happened.
I feel like there was nothing in LA like before 2000, like, I feel like the only folk punk bands or things remotely to folk punk were like Andrew Jackson Jihad, and like, and even then before that, Against
Right.
Me.
I mean, it seemed like there was a lot of other parts of the country, but yeah. not in LA. And I was wondering if you had the same impression.
Yeah,
or
I felt,
or maybe
you didn't even know what folk punk was.
I mean, I was really liked folk punk when mostly. I was younger. Yeah. Like, I liked like Ghost Mice and like Defiance Ohio, and I was like, right. those bands are really cool.
But that like
know.
Existed
yeah, I mean,
like,
from
in
the Midwest.
Some like
they were like
magical place.
Yeah, it wasn't like something that was like tangible. Like I,
right.
whatever. But yeah, I mean, I don't even think. Yeah, I didn't even. It was hard to find bands to play with because we didn't think that.
Right,
we
that
didn't
was
know
my,
who to hit up. Yeah. We were like, who plays folk punk? So we played with hardcore bands all the time and like crust punk bands because. Yeah. They were the people playing shows.
Anarcho,
like there was
yeah,
not
shows.
And that's, we connected that's... more with like the like ideal, like our music is more about the lyrics than it is about
sure.
the music. So right. then when we did play some like folk punk shows, you know, there'd be like shitty things done or said or, you know, in certain spaces. So we were like, I kind of like these like radical, like hardcore shows.
Well, we had kind of like when we first started playing like folk punk shows, like I remember one of the, Astrid said it first, like she was like, I'm kind of sick of these like fucking whiny dudes singing songs about their girlfriends. I hate this shit.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, because there's a lot of that in folk punk. And it's
a lot of
well,
the
because there's a lot
shit.
Of bleep. I mean, there's a lot of like people who are singer songwriters.
Yeah.
That are that get mixed up.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
It just gets
so
old.
So it's fine. Whatever.
I mean, we would go. I remember our first couple tours, we would go on tour. Am I talking shit? I'm talking shit.
Talk shit.
Doing it like we would go on tour right. and like every show we would play, it would be like us and then four dudes with acoustic guitars and
whining about their broken hearts.
Seriously, and the next time
about their ex bitches.
Yeah, oh. shit like that, and it was not
yeah.
fucking cool.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe
still
they,
a lot of that.
It gets old. Yeah. So like then we after at one point we decided that whenever we toured. We would actually like send out emails saying like we would like it to not only like we would like Astrid to not be the only like woman playing. That's
yeah.
like that was a priority. And then like or like, you know, or gender non-binary people like but just not all dudes, you know, like
not all straight whiny
yeah.
dudes.
And so that.
Sorry.
Oh,
shut. OK, just stop. Like, don't.
So, what? No, I mean, I play music like that, but I totally understand.
I've never been like angry while listening to you, Joe. Yeah. I like you. Yeah, you. I approve don't give that of your vibe. Music.
No,
and I like, you know, the songs that you do have that are about females, or I'm inferring that. Yeah, I think they're like well written and nice and
kind of sweet. Yeah.
Thank
yeah.
you. Yeah, it's not
yeah. that. Yeah. I mean, also when I do write songs like that, I try to make them gender neutral. So like, I mean, I'm straight, yeah. so you know that, but like, there's nothing in the lyrics that when you look at them that say it's specifically about a woman or something.
Yeah.
Too. But sorry, I just made that about me.
No, I just felt like you should know though.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So, yeah.
How do we get onto that? Oh, we're
talking shit about
tours with touring with whiny.
Oh yeah,
guys.
So the first time we actually requested that didn't happen again was when we toured the Midwest, and it worked out pretty well. We didn't. There was not one show that we played. Most of the shows we played had a lot of like had pretty diverse group of people playing music, so that was cool.
Yeah,
and it turned out. The shows were much better. And you know what? I'll say this to anybody that can. We were playing a show. Probably nobody's even like, but whatever. We were going to play a show in the Midwest somewhere. Whatever.
Sorry, my bad.
We were going to play a show in the Midwest somewhere. And the kid that I was dealing with when I was like, hey, can you make sure that there's like not only dudes playing the show? And he was like, well, I'm doing my voice of him because. It was all email, so there was no voice, but I'm going to do it anyways. He was like, well, bro.
Chad.
Well, Chad, I was talking to Brad and Tad, and we were shooting the pigskin around. And, you know, basically, like, when chicks play shows, not many people come out because, like, you know, they're kind of, like, not very good.
They're kind of, like, quiet. Oh, he did not. No one really wants to listen to that.
He did not.
He literally said that when the women that play shows in their area are kind of, like, not very aggressive. It's not – the music's not aggressive enough.
And I'm so fucking sick of hearing that shit.
And it's very boring. So, like, he could book women on the show, but it wouldn't be a very good show. We said thank you, but no thank you. We're moving on. And we didn't awesome. Play that town at all.
Yeah.
So
like, sucks for the rest of the people that missed out on you, but yeah.
We just didn't even and I'll put it to you this way, that was a big city in the Midwest. And we just didn't play there. And
chicks. Ugh.
And our shows the shows that we did otherwise turned out great.
Yeah, it was great. So, it was a fun awesome. Tour.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing to be active about, I guess. Like, in your emails, when you're booking the show, say, like, put that intention out there. Because I guess I feel like I hear a lot of people, you know, who might complain about that, but is also like, well, I can't do anything. And, like, that's something you can do if you're a band on tour put that out there to your booker that you want. You don't want it to be an all-white male show.
Yeah, it's so easy to just talk to people.
Like that one Sorry. like, you know that one Slipknot video where it's just a bunch of angry white guys in shirts?
You mean every Slipknot video?
I don't think I've seen that.
No, it's just such a joke. Oh, God. No, I don't know what. Sorry, I didn't need to cut you off. No, but I just think like, a bunch of white guys headbanging. It's so bad.
If you're listening to this right now, go and look up that video.
Yeah, it's and like watch a bunch that of angry video. White guys and like without Google shirts. And I don't know.
You can just Google angry Slipknot white guys.
Yeah, that's
in
what I did
video.
To find the video. Literally. Like, I'm serious. It'll make you laugh for days or just a few minutes. But as you were saying that shit,
I don't know. Yeah, I think that it's a really easy thing to just talk to people. People are reasonable. And actually, like, I've noticed that people will tell me that at shows that we play, they'll be like, wow, like, it's really great that there's like a bunch of other people playing here, like other women playing here. That's really cool. I didn't even know like that these other women played music or whatever. I don't know. We've had that happen in lots of cities.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's definitely like a great, that's a really great way to like confront shows. Like that's awesome. That's super cool that you guys are doing that. I'm sure that's helping a lot of other like non-male musicians kind of get their names out there and just, I don't know, feel more comfortable and confident in playing and, I don't know, living in a less male dominated world. That's awesome.
So phase three.
Oh yeah.
Bridgetown
and touring.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess we've mentioned Bridgetown many times on the show, but I guess if you guys could go into more detail, that would be cool. Were you there since the beginning of that, or how did that
Well, I can say how we got involved in Bridgetown.
Yeah,
basically, we...
Can you tell us what Bridgetown is first?
Oh, sure, yeah. Well, you probably would do a better job.
Yeah, it's a DIY, like...
it's a DIY.
Collectively run space. It's like a safer space. It's changed definitions somewhat. And it's, you know, ever-morphing because it's a collective, so... But it's a DIY, collectively run space that... tries to be safer for people, and it's always been like a community space, so it's always been trying to draw people in from the actual community, not necessarily just the punk community.
Well, I mean, do you mind if I...
Yeah, go ahead, talk about it.
I think one of the big things about Bridgetown is, like, as a space, many, like, radical spaces, they're not really trying to, like, they're not trying to draw in from the community. They're actually just trying to draw in, like, from their radical community. So it's very much like a vacuum. Bridgetown's goal when it opened was to be a space that, like, welcomed the community, which sometimes means that you're welcoming in people that are not very cool. But that's something that Bridgetown wanted to do from the beginning.
That's beautiful.
And I think it's been a really cool experience. Like, we've had a lot of new collective members at Bridgetown over the years that you would not ever think would run a DIY punk space. Yeah. But they are, and they're doing it.
They're doing a fucking good job.
And they're doing a better job than we are. You know what I mean? The community that runs Bridgetown is largely the people that live right around Bridgetown. And when it started, it wasn't that way.
And what kind of stuff do you do? Like, what kind of activities do you guys organize or shows do you throw? I know there's, like, a wide array of shit that you guys do there. Can you list some of the things that...
Yeah. Well, we have punk shows. We have punk shows, all various forms of punk shows. And then, you know, Astrid generally does these, like, workshop events, like, every... quarter about
often, yeah. Like, which is totally inspired from, like, you know, the days of playing with Jang, but having, like, different skill trading, and having people come in and talk about, like, bikes and composting and, like,
gardening
and animal rights and anarchism and political events that are happening in LA. We had, like, Riot Girl IE come a bunch. And there's actually... So that is a thing that happens currently at Bridgetown, is there's a Riot Girl group that meets there. I think they meet Tuesdays.
They meet there pretty often.
Yeah. They're really active right now. So they're doing a lot of stuff. I mean, honestly...
They need support, though. They definitely
We are less active in the collective than we've been. And we were, like, around since Bridgetown as a space opened. The collective was around a year or two before that physical space opened, and we have been around since this physical space opened. I think we were at the first or second meeting.
And how long? Yeah, how
did you get involved in
that? Yeah, how did you get involved?
Funny enough, I think Jang comes into this again. So we played a show that Jang booked with LaBea. Really good friends of ours, hardcore band. Anybody listen to hardcore?
They played the first show in Kevin's backyard.
Great.
I think it was like their first or second. It was like one of their first shows.
I think they're the best punk band in LA.
They're great.
In my opinion. But anyhow, so we played a show with LaBea, or a show that Jang had booked, and we met them, and they were like, yeah, we're trying to open this space in La Puente. And we were like, oh, that's really cool. And they invited us to come to one of their meetings. And so it was like their first meeting or their second meeting. And we went. They had just opened the space. Like, I don't even think they had a show yet.
No, I don't think so.
So, like, their first show, I think, was the Danger Show or something. That was their...
I don't know.
But anyhow, whatever. So they had just opened the space. And we came, and it was it's a far drive for us. Like, it's like an hour. But we came out there, and...
we went every week for so long.
For...
Twice a week.
Yeah, years. I don't know. And recently, it's just we've been really backing off. Not because... There's two reasons, I think. One reason is, like, we're very, like, Riley's getting older, and I don't have the time. Neither of us have the time. And we were stretching ourselves really, like, way too thin. But at the time, it seemed like it was important. The second reason is because the community itself doesn't need us. And I think it's really important to realize, like, when... I think that sometimes it was really cool at the beginning stages being involved. But right now, so many of the local people that are doing Bridgetown, they don't need me there telling them, like, what I think.
Sometimes
who fucking cares what I think?
Sometimes it's best to just step aside and let, you know, the people that the space was created for to...
Yeah.
I mean, we still try to, like, show up and be involved, and, like, definitely, like, if there's things that we can do to help, we like to do those things. And I love Bridgetown. I feel like it's a really special space. It's, like, filled with, like, really awesome people.
We made
and it's like always striving and trying to do better.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I mean, I think the aspect of bringing in the real community, quote unquote, that's like around there, you know, not just the vacuum, is really important and interesting. And I can't think of another space that really does that. You know, even Sub Rosa in Santa Cruz, like we talked about doing that, but like never really.
I think that's most
really happened, and it seems like it's a successful.
Well, thing. It's successful as it can be. It leads to a lot of things. You know, you got to consider the fact that, like, as a space goes, there are many. We talked about the drama in LA, right? There are many people that would feel otherwise. They feel Bridgetown is not always a safe space, and
I want to know another safe space. Just gonna throw it out there, La Concha's. Been pretty cool to the community of Boyle Heights. That place has been pretty fucking damn awesome. Sorry, take the reins.
I'm just saying when you're inviting in the community itself, you're not always going to be able to be a completely safe space, which is why I think Bridgetown's adopted the term safer space, because it just makes sense. There is no such thing as a completely safe space, first of all.
Not everybody's going to agree.
Yeah.
And
yeah. So you just try and like, offer you try and offer a space that's as safe as it can be, and a place where you can have dialogue with people who maybe say things that are not very cool.
Yeah, that's always been an important part of Bridgetown, is like opening that dialogue. And I think that's something that we've often talked about when the safe space has like come up, is like we want to be a place where people can talk about things. We want to be open to talk to people and educate people and like be a part of those conversations and not just be like, nope, figure it out, you know.
Well, we had kids from the community coming in that were like, they were throwing like backyard shows and shit, and we had people coming to Bridgetown that weren't throwing shows at all. Like they were just like, they just heard about the space and were wondering like if they could do like art shows there, or like for a while Bridgetown was doing a youth art event for like the local junior high school. It was like going on in Bridgetown. It was a trip.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So
they had like kid dance classes at Bridgetown.
Yeah.
Are you guys familiar with the Achuchas?
No.
It's in Sylmar. It's another space. It's kind of similar. You guys should check it out. It's really cool. It's super community oriented. And when I went, I still haven't been to Bridgetown. When I went though, I thought like this is kind of what a more like Chicano oriented version of what Bridgetown would be.
There you go.
It was cool. Yeah.
Also, something that popped in my head was Chuka's.
Inglewood,
I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, which I've only been to once. But
so huge.
Yeah, it's very large.
But that's a school.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, I went to one show there, so I don't really know anything, but it seemed like from the outside that there was a lot of real community involvement there.
Yeah, they have really cool events at. Yeah.
Cool. So we're getting to the end here. Was there anything else that you wanted to get to?
Yeah, I mean, this might be with everything said. I want to know, in regard to your music, I want to know, how do you guys describe your music to the people that listen to you? Like, what kind of band are you?
Bad one?
Yeah, when I'm cutting people's hair and they ask me about my band, they're like, what kind of band are you? And I'm like, a shitty folk punk band. And they're like, is that how you describe it? And I'm like, yeah.
That's really
like, what do you mean by that? And I'm like, I don't know. We're like, not musicians. It's just more about like talking about it. And when anyone finds out you play the violin, they're like, you're a musician. And I'm like, you haven't seen me play the violin. Like, that's always like the first response. But I don't know. I mean, I don't feel like we describe our band often to people who actually listen to us.
I'll say that before folk punk, like you were talking about folk punk in 2011 becoming like really a thing in LA. Before that was like happening, we didn't even call ourselves folk punk.
Right.
Yeah, it was because of the scene of folk punk that we called ourselves folk punk. Not, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, yeah, yeah.
We just called ourselves, we actually used to call ourselves an acoustic punk band.
Yeah.
I think we called ourselves like anarcho.
Yeah, anarcho punk. That's what I like. Yeah. Yeah, that's well, what I always thought before.
On Pat's Facebook page, it says acoustic punk.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
because no one wants to be associated with
folk. I actually have a few more questions I want to ask. Super curious, what are some things you guys would like to see changed in the scene?
I think like more dialogue between people and people being willing to like talk to each other in person and like with love.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it would be, gosh, I think it would be really important to see, and I don't know if it's entirely possible right now, but just a punk scene that's more willing to discuss like hard, to have those hard conversations with each other
and not hate each other.
Yes.
Yeah, that's definitely ideal. And what advice would you give to those of us who also want to contribute and make the scene a more safe and accepting, awesome place?
Try and fail.
Yeah, I guess just do whatever that means to you. Yeah. I mean, I think that means something different to everybody. So just if you have something that you think that would be cool or project that you think would be good, like, you should just do it. And if it sucks, like, well, now you are going to be better the next time, or like, maybe
or
it'll
you'll
be good
awesome at sucking.
Or maybe you'll figure out, like, wow, this is not what this scene needs right now, like, but this is something that it needs. So
I mean, we've done many different projects where, like, it's fallen apart.
Yeah, like, completely
and
failed.
Like, didn't work at all. Yeah. And we're like, oh, that didn't work, nobody came, or nobody even wanted that, or maybe it wasn't even necessary, you know. I don't know. But what I meant by try and fail, I didn't mean like you're just gonna fail anyways. Like, I wasn't trying to sound like super nihilistic or whatever. I just mean, like, it's important to, like, to do it even if you do fail, and to just do it again
and accept failure.
Yeah.
And not let it defeat you.
And don't let, like, God, don't let the people who are telling you that you're doing it all wrong ruin it, because you are doing it wrong probably, and it doesn't matter.
Don't let everybody else stop you from doing.
Yeah, just do it. I mean, that sounded very Nike. God, fuck Nike. Don't just do it.
Don't just do it, but do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck. Or fuck it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Okay, well, can we get you to play a song for us?
Yeah. Should we play a fast song or a slow song?
Whatever you want.
Should we play something punk?
You could play something
sure.
That goes with the lighting.
No, play something punk.
Okay. I don't know.
I don't know if we can play, but we're going to try.
Okay.
Are we good?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. One, two, three, go. I don't know if we could win. I don't even know what winning means anymore. It's a hopeless mess. Our pop song. We're going pop after this.
All right. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed that episode. I really liked it because, you know, we got to talk about some different stuff than we normally do, which I found refreshing. Today on the show, we heard It's Gonna Roll by Moon Bandits. Then we heard Assimilation by Resist and Exist. And right now, we're listening to Tub Thumping
by Chumbawamba. In our unedited director's cut version of this interview, we talk with Moon Bandits about Chumbawamba for a good chunk of time. You know, they're a really interesting band. If you've never looked into them and just heard this song a million times, I encourage you to look into them and see what they're all about. Anyway, thanks for listening, and we will see you next time. And remember, keep it punk rock.
You can edit all this out, by the way.
No, I'm going to leave it in.
I'm being weird.